So do you have a vision of integral peacemakers, what they would be like, how they would operate in the world?
Yes, but they have an international police force. And there's just no way around that. If everybody puts down their guns, then the expansionist dictators expand. That's just sort of the nature of the egocentric levels of development. In Carol Gilligan's, you know, three stages we talked about, selfish care and universal care, people at the selfish stage go and take what they want. And so you really do have these feudalistic warlord societies that spring up wherever there isn't some form of social contract, moral stage five, legal rights in place. And those are held in place by punishment if you violate the law. And that means cops. That means some sort of police force has to guarantee that. And so I don't see any way that we can get around that. Now, obviously, it doesn't mean that the whole point of having a defense is not to make war on people. I believe that's horrible and should be done only in self-defense against lower levels of morality. But if it's not in place, then you can't protect this very, very high levels of moral development, because these great depth and less span means that there are always large numbers of human beings at stages of moral development that killing you and murdering you and taking your property is fine. It's just sort of how it happens. And there always has to be some sort of police protection against that. It certainly has been in history.
So there are nations or groups of people who are arguing and at war with each other for different reasons. How can the integrally informed person with their police force along with them make an impact and create any kind of understanding, reconciliation? How do they interact with these disparate groups?
Well, hopefully what would happen, and this is obviously very utopian, but if we got to some point 1,000 years from now where there was some sort of world federation, then the world federation would have, just like any peaceful society has, it would have to have policemen to stop the people who do break the law, because some people do break the law. So in this case, though, lawbreakers would be Palestine, Israel, the United States, Iraq, whoever it is that is not playing nice. And an integrally informed level 6 world federation would have police in order to stop war.
Well, isn't this kind of what the United Nations is supposed to be?
Yes,
I mean, you're just calling it a world federation 1,000 years from now?
Absolutely. And the United Nations is a kind of a pioneer in that direction. It's hobbled by a lot of things. It's probably going to make it a transition structure. We've got this sort of crazy security council from World War II. So China and France and so on are sitting on this thing. And everybody agrees it's sort of it was appropriate enough for its time, but it's really out of place right now. In a world federation 1,000 years from now, my idealized version is not that there's war, that you're allowed to go have war, but you're still armed. Like I say, you still have to have policemen to keep the peace for those people who break the law. What an integrally informed approach would be, and this is very utopian right now, but would understand that there's always going to be people and cultures that can be at any level of development, level 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6, and that's appropriate, and they're allowed to be at whatever level that they want to be at. What they're not allowed to do, if they're at level 2 or level 3, and their natural inclination is war and aggression and creating these feudal empires, they're not allowed to do that. And you have cops to stop them from simply invading their neighbors and killing them, which is mostly what history has been all about. So an integrally informed has police in order to stop wars, not because you get to go around and fight wars. So, but it would have an understanding that somebody, that if there are cultures at the magical level and mythical level and rational level and pluralistic level, they're all going to have sort of different value structures and different interactions, and they're allowed to do that. What they're not allowed to do is try to put their values on another person. They're not allowed to force their values on another person or another culture. So an integrally informed cop, if you will, integrally informed police action is an action that allows all of these levels to exist in their own right without being invaded, brutalized, tortured by different levels of development that don't have any problem with doing that. It's very like what the United States Constitution does, which is a moral stage 5 document. And it prevents behavior from moral stage 1 and moral stage 2. It's against the law to do that. So I might, for example, hate somebody because they're gay. I'm not allowed to shoot them. Whereas in other cultures, you are. I mean, the stage 2 culture, that's fine. That's not a problem with that. So we had a relatively high moral stage 5 document that basically said you're not allowed to have these behaviors from these lower moral stages. If you do, we're going to lock you up. So my version of integrally informed would be just like that, only from a higher level. In other words, it would allow, it would stop the United States from infringing on other countries, just as the United States stops or tries to stop its citizens from shooting each other. So it would stop war on both sides. And if it was done right, it would be a, you know, the least amount of aggression conceivable given human beings, and particularly given the first 3 levels of development, which tend to be very aggressive.
Can you imagine a time in the world where all nations would be at the world-centric level?
Well, yes, but that means all citizens are still born at level 1.
So, but I'm talking about nations and all
it's
constitutions of nations.
Yeah, because what that means is that the regulating body, the rules and regulations, stem from this particular level. In this case, we're saying level 7. And that means that the behavior of citizens must conform to that level 7 standard. Now, in your privacy of your own home, you're allowed to think level 1 thoughts or level 2 thoughts or level 3 thoughts or level 4 thoughts. But in the public sphere, you can't behave according to level 2 thoughts. You can't shoot somebody. You can't rape somebody. You can't steal their property. And you can't force your values on them. So you have to behave according to level 7 standards. And so that's doable, because it just, it takes a certain center of gravity and a certain large number of politicians as well as citizens to be at that high level such that they would say, let's make this the law of the land. Now, previously, it's happened 3 or 4 times in history when we've gone from magical foraging tribes to mythic empires to rational industrial representative democracies. And in each of those cases, level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4, the rules and regulations of that level became the law of the land. So there was a time, again, when foraging warlords were okay. There was a time when mythic empires were okay. And now the sort of leading center of gravity is representative democracies, even though we have nations that are at level 2 and level 3 around the world. We find it appalling because we're coming to level 4. It's very conceivable, and I think highly likely, given historical analysis, that at some point we'll have actually the next thing that's probably up is a level 5 pluralistic world federation. And then beyond that, a level 6 integral world federation. I believe those two things will happen in the future. And I believe a pluralistic world federation is very much what the present United Nations is slowly heading towards. And this would be the pluralistic, what we're calling postmodern, postformal, level 5, and so on. And about 25% of Western populations, the citizens, 25% of them are at level 5, cultural creative. That, I believe, will be the next form of world federation. It might take a century, but I suspect that will be what it is, and it will have a multicultural sensitivity to allowing all of these cultures to be themselves without infringing or attacking each other. And that's a very healthy step if it's done in a healthy way. And then beyond that would be the possibility of an integral or integrally informed world federation. And that's way down the line. But you can sort of extrapolate what that might look like based on an integral level 6 orientation.
So, Ken, I mean, it's one thing to talk about war in self-defense, but there are these other categories that are introduced to the idea of a preemptive war. Or
how about war for fun and profit?
There's that.
War for pillage and plunder has been big throughout history, one of my favorites.
This idea of preemptive war, I mean, how can you apply the moral intuition to these kinds of situations?
Right.
And we think this person's going to kill all
these
people. We think so, you know?
Well, I think it's very hard, obviously, and it's very like capital punishment in that I believe it's morally justifiable if you can come up with almost absolutely certain evidence that this is the case and that capital punishment under those circumstances would serve a greater depth for a greater number of people. That's very hard to demonstrate, and certainly the proof part is almost impossible to demonstrate, which is, again, why I'm not generally in favor of capital punishment. The same thing applies to preventative war. I mean, war and self-defense is fairly straightforward in the same way that a human being has a right to do it, nations have a right to do it. And in my utopian level 7 world federation, we would use war as preventative, that is to say, as a police action, only to stop others who first started it in that sense. Preventative war is just as impossible. How can you prove that? I find that very, very, very difficult. If you could prove it, that if we take out this particular leader, then this number of good things will happen. And there's a, in some far out way you could demonstrate that, then theoretically I think preventative war would be justifiable morally. But I don't think in practice it is. It's almost impossible to do that. So preventative war usually is more a case of, I really want to attack the guy, and I can't think of a whole lot of other reasons except that really bad things will happen if I don't do it. And I don't see a whole lot of stronger argument than that. Obviously, if you can prove that you can stop the future murder of hundreds of thousands of people, as have been murdered in the past, then many people would say, okay, well, that, you proved it, and let's go ahead and stop that mass homicide. I don't think you can demonstrate it, so I think it's a very weak reason to do that.
I mean, when or how would you be able to prove that a preemptive war was justified?
What's that Tom Cruise movie that was just out where they had those precogs that would see the future with certainty? Minority Report. That's how. In the future, Minority Report, this is going to happen and we can prevent it. Otherwise, you can't. And in other words, I think these things are very tenuous. Aggression on another human being is always a very tenuous situation. And I'm saying that one of the things we want to do is bring in depth as a consideration. I'm not saying it gives answers. I'm just saying we have to factor that into the equation. But because it's so ambiguous, when you get into future and prediction and all of that, an already tenuous situation becomes vaporware as far as I'm concerned. It's just very, very non-workable as a form of the basic moral intuition or as a guide for ethical action.
Many people I know who are upset about current global events are out on the streets protesting, holding up signs that say no war and various iterations of that. What do you think about that, protesting?
I think that's fine. I would do it a little bit differently, though, and sort of on a principle that it might sound strange, but a principle that I used when Treya was choosing a form of treatment for her cancer. And she went through a lot of, you know, natural treatments and homeopathic treatments and a lot of conventional treatments, radiation, chemotherapy, the whole thing. And I would, during the period that she was making a choice, I would try to state my opinions as strongly as possible. And if she was choosing a course that I thought was wrong, I would tell her as strongly as I could, because I wanted to be truthful, and she also wanted to know what I actually thought. But once she made the decision, which, you know, as often as not, was I might agree or might not agree, she was very independent, she would make up her own mind. As soon as she decided what to do, even if I disagreed with it, I shut up and got behind her 100%, because at that point, my disagreement was just cruel and mean and unsupportive. And I tend to feel the same way about a nation, in a sense, going to war. If you're going to protest, protest before the action starts, in a sense. When the deliberation is being made is when I think is the best time to protest, because that's also stating, it's trying to have a part of the deliberative process, it's part of letting the leaders know how you feel. But once the war starts, and it's pretty clearly it's going forward, then protest tends to hurt the soldiers as much as it hurts anybody. And I'm not saying don't protest after it starts. I'm just saying it becomes more ambiguous at that point for me. If you look at the Vietnam War, which I had some very strong reservations about that for all sorts of reasons. I don't think it was justified in many, many, many ways. I don't think it was black and white, but I don't think it was justified. About 58,000 American soldiers were killed by Viet Cong or the enemy during that war. And then when they returned, around 63,000 died with drug, suicide, or other forms of death, as studies showed, based in large part on the reception this country gave to them. I mean, we asked them to fight, and then we hated them. And an argument can be made that we killed more of our soldiers than the enemy did, 63,000 compared to 58,000. That bothers me. And I don't know how, again, it's depth versus span. It's very hard to come down on these one way or the other. But you have to sort of find a way to express extreme displeasure with a national course of action while not making the soldiers that we asked to go fight suffer. They're basically the ones that tend to suffer for this. I don't have a good answer to that, but it makes me a little bit uneasy with just mere protesting without somehow taking that into account. And I do think protesting is best, you know, during the deliberation process.
So a listener is listening to this program and thinks, well, I'm extremely committed to peace and reconciliation in the world. And I'm not happy with the course of action that I see the United States taking in all different kinds of global theaters.
Right.
What would Ken recommend as my integral approach here?
I know. And it's so, see, here's part of the difficulty. If we look at, and this is why I think it's so important to try to sort of weigh all sides of the equation. If you look at Saddam Hussein, for example, conservative estimates are several hundred thousand people, his own people. He's killed, murdered, tortured, raped, maimed. And it's, again, frankly, the moral structures of level two. That's sort of how warlords work. In those kind of societies, that's just sort of standard, so to speak. But the problem with simply saying, I don't like the United States attacking like that is, well, does that mean you like what Saddam Hussein is doing? I mean, how, that's okay that he kills 100,000, but we're not allowed to? In other words, I don't see kind of a balance in terms of people who say, I want peace and reconciliation. My utopian view, as I said, if we had this sort of world federation from level six to level seven, is that the United States is not allowed to attack, and Saddam Hussein is not allowed to kill 200,000 people. But unless you have both of those things happening, then you really don't have peace and reconciliation. And most of the people who talk peace and reconciliation mean we have peace and reconciliation, and he's allowed to kill 100,000 people. I don't think that's peace and reconciliation. I think that's naive. So my sort of utopian view is that we would get to a point someplace where both of those would be stopped at the same time. And until that happens, it's very hard to say, well, you can't do this or you can't do that, or we shouldn't do this or we shouldn't do that. And it becomes really ambiguous when one country is trying to stop Saddam Hussein from killing 100,000 people. In other words, it's not black or white there in that event either. So most of the situations that I see when people are sort of for or against these actions, both people that are for it and against it don't strike me as very balanced. They don't seem to be taking all of these things into account, and they're representing the values that they think are important, and I think they are important, but they're not representing other values that are also out there and I think need to be put on the integral table in order to make these kinds of decisions. And of course, this war and things like abortion and things like capital punishment are things, as soon as you state your opinion on it, half the people hate you because it's so polarized that they're just...
At least half of me hates you right now. One half, at least. You know, the other half still likes you. But,
So it's just the blood gets boiling. And in all of those cases, though, whether it's capital punishment or whether it's abortion or whether it's war, even though I've come down on one or the other side on some of the examples, my point is that you can never really say which side to come down on. You really have to take all of it into account. And that includes depth and span, and there's levels of development, and the whole notion of the fact that if we had a world federation and all war could be stopped, then that's one thing. But if not, then we really have to kind of make these spot judgments that are really very difficult and are all versions of there are 10 people in the lifeboat and you got to throw three out. You're not allowed to say, I want peace and reconciliation, we don't throw anybody out. You're not allowed to say it. This is a thought experiment. What three would you throw out? And at that point, it's interesting to see how people respond.
Okay, so let's pretend that you're elected as the head of the World Federation. You're in charge. You're the director. What kinds of education are you going to offer the members? How are you going to set this up?
In this very utopian way.
This is a thought exercise.
Understood. Okay. The idea would be that everybody's right. And that means that, again, we'll use our simple seven-level example. You're allowed to be at level one, you're allowed to be at level two, you're allowed to be at level three, you're allowed to be at level four, and level five, and level six, and level seven. You're not allowed to be at level two, or three, or five, and take your value structure and impose it on somebody else. Now, that's my idea of utopia, is that one level is not allowed to impose itself on other levels. It's not allowed to take its values, its needs, its drives, and impose them on others.
Higher levels aren't allowed to impose on lower levels as well?
Yes, but that changes. And in other words, level seven is allowed to impose because it includes all of the previous ones. But we're saying 1,000, 2,000 years from now, there might be a level eight and a level nine. Just as when Rome imposed its law on warring tribes, it was a level three law that actually civilized an enormous amount of the world and with a great, you know, extraordinary strides made. But the laws that Rome imposed at level three are ones that we would consider barbaric at level four or five. So Western democracies at level four and five are allowed to impose their views on all lower levels. That's how it works. But we're now saying we're at level seven. And so what I'm saying is level 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1 are not allowed to impose their views on others. And it's just the thought experiment, but that's how it works. 1,000 years from now, level 8 will be imposing itself on level 7. I mean, these are more inclusive, more embracing, and more encompassing. But what level 7 says, and the only reason we want to put it in charge, is level 7 says 6 has a right to be 6, and 5 has a right to be 5, and 4 can be 4, and 3 can be 3, and 2 and 1. Whereas level 4 doesn't say that. Level 4 says, I'm right, you're wrong, to hell with everybody else. I've got the right value. So if everybody's going to be right and we have this sort of level 7 utopian thing, then part of what's required, obviously, is that there's an integrally informed community of individuals that we agree the research shows these levels are there. Everybody's sort of behind it, just as we today agree that every person gets one vote. All of the level 4 rational democratic procedures we all agree have merit. In some future utopian, we're saying that level 7 will have the same thing. Everybody will agree that these things are in place. That means the educational system would be geared to help bring people all the way up to level 7, just as education today is supposed to bring people up to level 4. Actually, 4 to 5 now. Level 5 postmodern is what's often happening in the educational system, which is fine. So on a future utopian, education would help bring people up to level 7. We'd also understand that around the world, in our country and other countries, individuals and sub-pockets and gangs and cultures and cliques and movements would be at these different levels. And they are allowed to do that, but they're not allowed to infringe on other people's rights in doing so. And so we would have to have a police to stop people from theft, robbery, rape, murder, and so on. But it would also now be applied not to just individuals in our nation, but to the behavior of nations with each other. So under those circumstances, there's simply a moratorium on war. I mean, that just stops. And because what you want to do, war is a way that people impose their partial values on others if they start the war. What's happening from level 7 is that we're allowing all these other value structures to exist. So war simply stops. And the only reason we start it is if somebody actually infringes, invades, or so on. Then we have to have a cop to come in and say, no, 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 and use force if necessary to stop them, lock them up, or whatever. Under those circumstances, then, value structures are no longer allowed to settle their disputes with war. We've stopped that in our utopian society. And so now the only recourse they have is to work their values out in non-aggressive ways. And that can be through commerce, it can be through art, it can be through games, it can be through sports, it can be aggressive business practices. You're just not allowed to shoot somebody. So under those circumstances, physical aggression is removed as a way to settle disputes. And people will still be aggressive, which is fine, but it's going to have to be channeled into interior growth or values growth or artistic growth or whatever. And then we would have cops to stop people from infringing on those basic rights. Now that to me would be peace and reconciliation.